Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
But I think the biggest thing would be a requirement that the State Corporation Commission look at a set of peer utilities and set the utilities' return on equity. This is the margin they can make for capital investments, that they set that return on equity to be an average of that peer group, which, by the way, if you do the math, is higher than their authorized return on equity right now. So that would be how they make more money.
I think that's an accurate portrayal.
On this episode of Pod Virginia,
rate regulation.
It can cut both ways.
A powerful discussion about regulating utilities.
The governing assumption for years in Richmond has been if the utility puts its shoulder behind particular legislation, it will move forward.
It's all about the base rates.
Watch this space. There's more to come in the days and weeks ahead.
You are listening to Pod Virginia. Stick around.
In as many as favor the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion is agreed to. The ayes and nays are called for. Shall the motion to pass by be agreed to?
Madam President, I inquire the clerk, have we completed the calendar?
Yes, sir.
Thank God.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Michael Pope.
I'm Tom Bowman.
And this is Pod Virginia, a podcast that's totally confused about all the electric utility regulation that's floating around the General Assembly this year.
There's a couple major bills under consideration, and we want you to understand how they work and who benefits.
Returning to the podcast is a friend of the show who is going to help us understand what's at stake in this debate. He's the managing director of Advanced Energy United, Harry Godfrey. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So there's two big bills. We're going to talk about both of them. I want to start with the one that is known as the Affordable Energy Act. This was introduced by Delegate Rip Sullivan, who's a Democrat, and Lee Ware, who is a Republican. Essentially, it allows the State Corporation Commission, the state regulatory body, to lower base rates when it determines that's appropriate. Harry, explain this bill. What does this do and who benefits?
So the way to think about this is restoring the oversight and rate regulation powers of the State Corporation Commission. Their ability to essentially...
Can I butt in here just a little bit? Explain the backstory there. How is it the SEC lost the ability to do this kind of regulation?
It is a long story that we probably don't have enough time for, but in brief, in the very beginning of right around 2000, Virginia went about trying to deregulate its utilities, have them sort of compete on the open market. This is about the same time that California was doing that, and that ended very poorly in California. Folks may remember a company named Enron and all of the shenanigans and dealings around that. So in about 2007, Virginia went about re-regulating their utilities. And in that re-regulation process and subsequent bills, the powers of the State Corporation Commission to sort of set rates and adjust them were constrained and narrowed a bit. And so that's where we then come into this sort of present day dynamic where there are some limitations set upon just how much oversight the State Corporation Commission can have on electric rates.
So Virginia has this body here, the State Corporation Commission. It's a regulatory body. It's supposed to regulate the electric utility. And yet the historical function here to do oversight has been set aside. And this bill would return that historic oversight. Is that correct?
That's correct in a nutshell. Obviously, the State Corporation Commission has oversight. They've been exercising it, but there have been some limitations placed upon this. So this just restores them to sort of what the original function was intended to be and cuts out some of that sort of weird complexity and convoluted limitations.
So my understanding of this bill is that it's actually pretty simple and it does roll the clock back basically to the 1990s. However, in my experience, often simple bills have unintended consequences. So Harry, I'm curious what your perspective is here on whether this simple bill is better than a comprehensive bill with a variety of stakeholder inputs. Isn't that generally more desirable?
I think for the purpose of restoring reasonable SEC oversight over rates really specifically, the clarity this bill brings to that role is actually what's desirable here. You know, Thomas, I agree with you on the need for sort of comprehensive stakeholder input when we think about energy policy briefly. And it's worth taking half a step back to think about the relevant roles of the legislature versus the SEC. You know, the legislature goes about setting energy policy quite rightly in terms of how do we generate energy in this state? Who owns which aspects of that? How do we transmit it? Who gets to operate in this space? The VCA is a perfect example of that, in a place where lots of different stakeholders with lots of different priorities came together to set Virginia's energy policy and put us on a path towards 100% clean. That is exactly the role that the General Assembly and sort of big comprehensive stakeholder work, that's where that should happen. And that makes a lot of sense. The SEC was created to be an adjudicatory body to oversee implementation of that policy, make certain the utilities were following through on it and doing so in the most cost-effective manner possible. And so a simple, clear set of guidelines for them that they can then operate within and go about delivering upon that. Let's implement this policy. Let's do it in the most cost-effective manner. I think that's actually, that has real merit here. So we're talking about, are we setting policy or are we helping a body essentially undertake its mission? This is about doing the latter thing, and that's the right role for the SEC. So simple, I think in this case, is probably better.
So what's the current status of the Affordable Energy Act? So this bill was introduced by Delegate Reb Sullivan. He's a Democrat, and Delegate Lee Ware is a Republican.
Well, and there is a Senate version of that as well that was introduced by Senators McClellan and Deeds.
Okay, all right. Well, we've got Sullivan and McClellan, who, of course, were key players in the Clean Economy Act. So yep. This actually has the imprimatur here of that entire effort. What's the current status of it?
These are each moving through their respective chambers. The Senate bill is, I think, on a slightly faster track. It is moved through subcommittee. I do think it is tied into a larger conversation with some of the other legislation we'll talk about a little bit later. So I think what ultimately happens to it depends in part upon what sort of other activity we see occur. But to date, they are still moving forward.
Is there any opposition to this? I mean, this kind of seems like a no-brainer, right? Like the SEC is set up to do this for whatever reason, has not been doing this for the past few years. This bill would restore the right of the historical ability that the SEC used to have. Who's against this?
I think in all likelihood is the folks that might stand to lose from it, which is probably the utilities. The ability of them to set through legislative policy how much they earn, which we'll talk about more in a minute. You know, they would prefer that happen than in front of an independent body that doesn't necessarily answer to them. Now, I think they would ostensibly tell you they can embrace components of this, but they would like some restrictions or restraints upon it, which sort of fundamentally goes against the philosophy of why we have an SEC, why we have an oversight body like that for that purpose. So they're probably, if you're going to identify the biggest loser from this, it might be the incumbent utilities. The biggest winners, anybody who pays an electric bill.
Harry, one thing that some of those incumbent utilities have said in public conversation about this bill is that, as introduced, the Ware, Sullivan, McClellan, Deeds bill could potentially call into question their ability to provide customer refunds. What do you say to that? And do you think that's a valid concern?
The ability of the individual utility to go about providing customer refunds. I mean, I think that that hinges upon the particular decision-making of the State Corporation Commission in particular cases. The State Corporation Commission says, we've looked at these various rates and we've decided that you probably over-earned here and you need to return that money. That seems like they would readily be able to issue a customer refund. So I would have to better understand why they would articulate that. I don't see that as being a real downside risk here.
All right. Well, let's move on to the other significant utility regulation that's floating around the General Assembly this year, which is way more complicated. And some people have taken this to calling this the Phase 2 Energy Regulation Bill, a.k.a. the Dominion Bill. So this was introduced by leadership, Senate leadership and House leadership here, Dick Saslaw and Terry Kilgore. So I guess you could look at this as the leadership bill as well. It, Harry, basically, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's in here, but I think the headline here is that it allows Dominion to make more money. Is that a one aspect of this bill?
I'm sure that Dominion would contest that headline, but, and we'll go into the mechanics of that a little bit more. I think that's an accurate portrayal.
So what is that bill, the Phase 2 Energy Regulation Bill, and how does it work? What are they proposing?
Yeah, so a couple of different sort of elements to it, but I want to drill in on what I think is the sort of central purpose of that. And it's worth noting with this too, as with everything in this General Assembly session, it too is in flux. So the original version of this bill had a number of different elements in it. Those elements, at least on the Senate side, as this bill has sort of moved along, a number of those have come out. So let's talk about what I think still really remains in the bill and sort of the core of the bill. And that is, the utility wants to take some of these RACs and they want to put them into base rates.
You said RACs. Explain that word RAC.
Yeah, that is a rate adjustment clause, better known as a rider. Basically, it is a line item that you would see on your bill that says, we are charging this amount for this specific project. And these were created to allow the utilities to recover costs on specific projects. And particularly since that re-regulation that I talked about from 2007 onwards, these have been the individual line items that have been steadily added and added to customer bills. So even as base rates have remained relatively stable and constant, if you get more and more line items added on your bill steadily rises. So part of this bill is about moving some of those individual RACs or riders into base rates. But I think the biggest thing would be a requirement that the State Corporation Commission look at a set of peer utilities that Dominion has identified and set the utilities' return on equity. This is the margin they can make for capital investments, that they set that return on equity to be an average of that peer group, which, by the way, if you do the math, is higher than their authorized return on equity right now. So that would be how they make more money.
One key distinction between these bills is that the Phase 2 Leadership Energy Bill, or the Dominion Bill, does roll back something that when I was in the House caused a lot of consternation, and that was a triennial review. And this is proposing a biannual review. So if we're trying to hold utility companies accountable, wouldn't we want to review rates more often?
I think that's reasonable. It also sort of opens the possibility that if rates are unnecessarily low, that they would get increased more quickly. So it can cut both ways. It is a feature of the bill. From a substantive standpoint, I think whether it's biennial or triennial matters, but doesn't make a huge deal of difference and certainly isn't necessarily a reason to object to the legislation.
One thing that could matter to a lot of people, though, in this Phase 2 energy bill is that it could provide relief faster to a lot of the customers who feel the brunt of like inflationary pressure, for example, because it would give rate relief in review, at least in 2023, this calendar year, instead of waiting to 24. You've mentioned some; these are in flux. Is this something that would make sense for either of these bills?
I think moving forward, certainly with the first piece of legislation we talked about, the Affordable Energy Act, would provide that relief. Moving over to a biennial process might provide that relief as well here, but that's only if the calculus that's done around the rate review then comes away saying, you know, here's how the utility is over-earned, or here's where this money is, and it should be returned to consumers. If part of what this bill does, and currently as the bill is written, this is part of what it does, is says the utility is under-earning on its capital investments, so it should have a higher margin of return. It should be able to essentially earn more money and charge more money. I'm not certain that that necessarily results in bills going down. That could result in bills going up too.
So you mentioned earlier sort of people who support these pieces of legislation, people who oppose them. So just for the record here, your organization, Advanced Energy United, has taken position on both of these bills, right? So share with our listeners what your position is on both of these bills.
So we are in support of the Affordable Energy Act, and we are in opposition to the legislation, the Phase 2 energy regulation, also known as the Dominion Bill, as has been proposed. It's worth noting, we're not alone in that by far. A wide variety of organizations and companies have expressed serious concerns about the Dominion legislation. Everybody from the Sierra Club to Americans for Prosperity, companies like Microsoft, representatives like the Virginia Poverty Law Center, Wegmans, Appalachian Voices, Google, and many more. So there is lots of consternation about what this legislation would really mean for consumers and business in Virginia.
You just listed a wide variety of groups there that have a variety of interests. I would imagine they probably don't all oppose this bill for the same reason, but just as a group, what are their reasons? Like what kind of reasoning are we talking about with that long list that you just enunciated?
And let's be clear, I don't want to speak for any other organization in that. From the standpoint of Advanced Energy United and the clean energy industry, we want to make certain that there is this reasonable balance in policymaking, that we're getting good energy policy in Virginia, but that it is implemented in the most cost-effective manner possible, and the SEC is able to do its job effectively. If the SEC finds its hands bound, or the process of building out new technology, new transmission, new generation resources becomes more expensive, it's harder to make the sort of energy transition we're talking about towards a zero carbon energy future. And so there's a concern for us. You see this legislation, what happens to that transition? Does this slow or stagnate that as a result? So that's where we come from in terms of concern. But I don't want to speak for any of the other organizations that are out there talking about this.
Harry, you know, speaking as somebody who's worked in a lot of Democratic politics, the governor really matters when appointing people to various executive agencies and positions. Why should Democrats trust the SEC to appoint people who will operate in good faith under, frankly, either one of these bills?
Yeah. Well, so, Thomas, it's worth noting, the SEC is a little unique in the appointment dynamic around that. Unless we're in a period where the House and Senate are in recess, it is actually the responsibility of the General Assembly to make appointments to the SEC. And currently, there are two open seats on the SEC. So this is a very active dynamic right now. But we have a divided legislature. So Democrats and Republicans need to come together and find a way of filling those seats so the SEC can do its job and move forward. So it's really a secondary question of whether or not Governor Youngkin will have any influence over that. It's first and foremost, how can the General Assembly come together and find candidates that allow this really important adjudicatory body to continue functioning? There are three members on it. There are two vacancies right now. It effectively can't function. We're recalling a judge who is retired to help with that in the process, but that can't go on too long. It needs to get resolved.
Harry, these bills are still in flux. And by the time this episode comes out, either on Thursday or just a week from now, the posture of one or both of these bills could look or will look very different. Can you give us a peek behind the scenes at some of the pain points or how these negotiations are going or a preview of perhaps what we can expect an outcome to be?
You know, I don't want to try and forecast how this comes out, in part because, you know, look, the governing assumption for years in Richmond has been if the utility puts its shoulder behind particular legislation, it will move forward. I think the power dynamics in Richmond are complicated between a divided General Assembly and obviously the governor's diverse priorities in the state and beyond the state. And so there's definitely some tension there. You know, the energy plan that the governor released last fall, and we were not necessarily cheerleaders of that, but the governor highlighted some of the places where they've had real issues with the utilities. So you can't automatically assume that the governor is necessarily supportive of the utilities legislation. Combine that with the wide variety of stakeholders who have expressed really serious concerns about the Dominion bill, and it's not impossible to see a path forward. They certainly have significant support there, but it's not easy either. You could have some interesting bedfellows on both sides of the aisle as a result. So that could be a little difficult, but I think there are a lot of different factors being weighed in there. That bill has already been slimmed down and some of the initial proposals have been pulled out. I think you'll see it modified further before it ultimately makes progress, but I think we'll continue to see progress. It's been moving in the Senate. It has not moved as quickly in the House. So I'd watch the Senate very carefully around that. And then I think it's how the Dominion bill moves forward will also, for better or worse, govern how the Affordable Energy Act moves forward too. So watch this space. There's more to come in the days and weeks ahead.
Great. Well, we talked about the Affordable Energy Act. We talked about the Dominion bill. Before we let you go, Harry Godfrey, one other bill that I want to get your thoughts on that's related to this stuff, but a little bit different, which is a bill to reinvigorate the Commission on Electric Utility Regulation. So this is a body that was created back in 2008 and has been dormant for a while. Senator Surville and Delegate Kilgore are working together to reinvigorate this commission, to staff it with seven people, to spend $1 million for seven staffers. Tell us about this Commission on Electric Utility Regulation, and what do you think the fate of Surville and Kilgore's bill is going to be here?
You know, I'm really optimistic to see that we have bipartisan, bicameral support for reinvigorating this commission. You know, the legislative session in Virginia is too short to handle the complexity of energy policy that we face and we're going to face into the future. And so having that sort of professional commission that is managing that and thinking about that policy outside of it and then informing the legislative process, I think is incredibly important.
And members of the General Assembly would also be on that commission too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So they would be engaged in it. It could meet outside of session. They could work through this policy. They could dive into the weeds. They could take some of this legislation, pull it out of the crush of session, and really think it through. I think the key thing, so I'm optimistic about that legislation moving forward, given who's supporting it in the Senate and the House, and that we've got both Democrats and Republicans thinking about it, talking about it. The key question that folks should work for and really should fight for around this is not only should that legislation be passed, but the commission needs sufficient funding to hire staff to actually carry out these tasks. So it's really important. I know on the Senate side, there are budget proposals to do that. I don't know that that exists on the House, but I'm optimistic in the final budget there will be dollars for that.
All right. Harry Godfrey of Advanced Energy United, thanks for coming back on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Pod Virginia is a production of Jackleg Media. Our producer is Aryan Ballou, and our advertising sales manager is David O'Connell. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and hey, write a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. Make sure to smash the subscribe button so you don't miss the next episode of Pod Virginia.
This podcast is so jackleged.